Fred Film Radio, New York Film Festival, United States.
This is Fred Film Radio. I'm Samantha Sartori at the New York Film Festival 2020 in this incredibly brave online and drive-in edition, and the first year under the direction of Dennis Lynn. One of the most acclaimed movies selected in the main slate is The Truffle Hunters. And today we have the pleasure to speak with the directors, Gregory Kershaw and Michael Dweck. Good morning, Gregory and Michael. Thank you for being with us today.
Good morning. Good morning.
You open a windows of one of the most astonishing fairy tale in the edition of the festival. It looks like a small movie about a little community, but the movie became huge. What happened and what drove you to make a movie about the truffle hunters in Alba, Italy?
Well, we were both fortunate enough to stumble upon this area in Monferrato and Lange on a family holidays when we had finished the last film, The Last Race, in Copenhagen. We were looking for a place to go just to relax and just to look at beautiful forests, and we ended up in this region, not knowing each other had been there. And what we had learned was that besides it being a very beautiful town and a beautiful area, is that there were truffles there, because the people in the villages were asking us, so why are you here now in August? It's so hot, everyone's by the sea. You should come back in November when the truffles are here. And we said, well, truffles, where does that come from? They said, there's people up in the hills somewhere. We don't know who they are, but there's these old men with their dogs. No one's ever seen them. But it's a miracle is that when we put, you know, 50 euros in this little box outside of a trattoria, that the next morning, luckily appears a truffle. And that led us to come back and to spend 3 years there making this film, because we thought that there was it's like you're saying, it's a bit of a fairy tale to us. It was a place that seemed to stop in time. People were not on their phones, sitting at cafes. They were talking and reading newspapers. You know, people weren't at home on computers and watching television. They were working in the farm, and they were having conversations over meals. So that to us was very interesting. And we thought to create this film where we can immerse an audience into this beautiful world without really interrupting things, just to show, you know, a very, very different side of things.
Gregory?
Well, you know, as Mike was saying, we both kind of stumbled on this world in this amazing coincidence, and we were struck with it, and we didn't have a story really when we started. We had this sort of shared we had this shared fascination with this place, and then there was this mystery of the truffle hunters, which was the start of a thread that led us to the story, but. The whole project really started with our desire to find a way to express to the audience what we felt when we were first there. This feeling of, you know, Mike's magic, mystery, this fairy tale. And we started realizing that the way that the film was going to be told was almost like a storybook. And we wanted each scene to feel like a page in a storybook. And so as you were watching it, you felt like you were flipping through a storybook, and you had all the wonder and all the magic of what that might mean.
I see. While you were making the movie, did you expect this response from festival and audience? Because the movie is becoming big.
Yeah.
You were in Telluride. Now you are at the New York Film Festival. I mean, everybody loved the movie. And, you know, but looking at the movie, like, I was wondering if you, like, ever, like, thought that this kind of response while you were making the movie.
Go ahead, Greg. Sorry.
We finished the film the day before Sundance. I mean, it was literally carried the DCP. Mike carried the DCP into the premiere. So we, up to the point of Sundance, we'd seen the final picture lock cut with our editor, and then we'd seen the final version. Well, we actually hadn't watched it all put together before Sundance. So we knew that we made a film that we loved. Well, we were making it. We made a lot of choices that I think were very different than what people making a document, conventional process of making a documentary might entail. But they were things that felt true to us, and it felt like it was a way of expressing this world to an audience. So we loved it, but we had absolutely no idea how an audience would feel about it. But I guess the other thing too, in addition to making kind of the film that made us happy, there was a lot of joy in the process of making this mm-hmm. film. Just being, when we were there in Italy, when we were filming with these men, you know, most of them are 70, 80 years old, in nature with them. Their lives are filled with so much joy. And I think that the passion that they have for what they do, the happiness and the laughter that just naturally exists in their lives, it became infectious. And the process of making the film was really, it was different than what usually goes into making a film, because we were always laughing and having a good time. And I think maybe that's transferring through to the audience.
Absolutely.
I remember when we got the phone call from, well, first of all, we were working all night. Sometimes we'd have to be with them during the day, and then they would go out. It's okay, we're going out at 1 a.m. till 7 a.m. So we'd be out with them all day and all night. And I remember we'd say to each other, well, how beautiful would it be to share this with Sundance? And then we were in Guarene. We were still working. And we got a phone call from Sundance, and the film hadn't been finished yet. We said, there's no way. We said, how great would it be to be in Cannes or Sundance or New York or Telluride? You know, it was an impossibility. And then we just got the call from Sundance. We said, oh, my God. And what was important, they told us what the film meant to them, that it was a glimpse into a world that nobody really saw. And it was also, you know, a world that, like Greg is saying, is full of joy, and also one that hasn't been stripped away by technology. And then when Sony calls and said, you know, we got a surprise for you, and then, you know, Ken came and did Telluride, and then, you know, they told us it's the first documentary to make it to those five major film festivals. That was like
all of them. Really, congratulations. How did you contact the men, and how did you gain their trust? It is obvious that they are very protective of their world.
Mm-hmm. They are. Well,
they don't even want to share with their own children.
No. We have one word. The person that gave it access was Letitia. Letitia is our translator, and then became our co-producer. But Letty is from Torino. Her grandparents are from that region, you know, from, I believe, Monferrato, and she understands dialect, and she also understands the culture of how to deal with these people too. So it for her, it was also a joy. I mean, she became like, we became like family. We became so close, because we first came for like 2.5 weeks, and we told them we'd be back, and they said, whatever, you'll be back. And of course, we come back like a week later. And then we spent 3 more weeks, and then we'd come back a week later, and a week later, and it didn't stop for 3 years. And Letty was, she understood how to, you know, break down these barriers with them, because we were Americans, and they have some preconceived notions of what Americans are, that we had to change. And also they wanted us to pay, you know, our dues, you know, so we would go out, we had these heavy cameras, the camera's really heavy. And the tripod's really heavy. The lens is really heavy. And we're out going down cliffs like this at night. The opening shot of the film, you see people always say, oh, it's a drone shot. Now that's us on the other side of the cliff. When he's going up the dog, we're on the other side holding on and filming towards the cliff. But I think that helped also. We were with them all the time. We were with them in the fields. We were with them at night, truffle hunting. We were with them when they went to the doctor, when they were ill. You know, we spent a lot of time with their families. And Letty takes care of a lot of these truffle hunters now also.
So like only a curiosity. So Letizia is the person that is going to take care of Birba?
Well, right now, yeah. Right now, Birba's being taken care of by the mayor of the town, and Letty makes a phone call every day and makes sure, and also visits. She was there. She spent 2 months with Aurelio also every day, moving him from one apartment to another, one house to another. And she keeps close eye on everybody. On Carlo and Maria. I mean, we're kind of like family.
climate change is an underlying aspect of your documentary. What kind of effect is having on the business of the truffle hunting, and how have the other factors of the modern world affect them?
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing that we discovered through making the film. The truffle, the white truffle, it's dependent on these very specific conditions in the environment. It can't be cultivated, and the white truffle only grows in this thin strip of land that's mostly in Italy, a little bit in some of the neighboring countries, but the conditions have to be just right. And so as the global climate changes, weather patterns change, there are fewer and fewer truffles every year. And there's also other factors in the area, like deforestation and agricultural runoff, that are resulting in fewer truffles. But at the same time, the demand for truffles is growing exponentially around the world. It's not just a local delicacy anymore. It's not a European delicacy. It's everybody in the United States wants truffles. Everybody in Asia wants truffles now. So the demand is unprecedented. And that's what's resulted in this competition that's become so fierce. I mean, you see it in the film, that we think some of the truffle hunters have taken to poisoning the dogs of other truffle hunters to keep them out of their truffle hunting spots. So, you know, it's all these big global factors that are kind of converging in these very, you know, very small scale way, and having a big impact on the day-to-day lives of the truffle hunters.
And I just want to add to that because of climate change, there are some regions that were not ideal to grow grapes for wine, but that's changed because the weather's warm. Like, we spend a lot of time in Bosolasco, and that town was always in the winters were just hard, you know, just tough winters and a lot of snow, and you can never grow grapes in those mountains. And now that changed. So deforestation, you know, land is purchased inexpensively. They strip all the land of the trees, and then they plant grapes. And that's also a problem in not only those newer areas where plantings are taking place, but also in the areas that exist. Like, we're Damiano, when we got a phone call from one of our truffle hunters that they're stripped the land. Somebody had purchased the firewood in that land and taken chainsaw and in 20 minutes stripped, you know, 200-year-old oak trees from that land. And they're gone forever. And now we got there that, you know, Sergio was crying, saying how you destroyed, you know, this has been my family for generations. These trees, they don't belong to him, of course, because it's public. So we also have we also started a conservation program where we're raising money, and we're going to be purchasing, you know, giving money to a trust in Italy where they'll be purchasing land, truffle land, so it'll be impossible to deforest in the future.
That is beautiful. There is I would like to talk about the special scene. There is a beautiful stage scene with Angelo Gagliardi eating truffle with opera music. It seems like an attempt to let the spectators to test white truffle with their eyes and their ear. Can you talk about this scene?
I think that scene, that idea of tasting the truffle and smelling the scent of a truffle, that was very much at sort of the core of our filmmaking process. We wanted to create a cinematic experience that you know, where you could see the world, you could hear the world, but you could feel the world. We wanted you to be able to smell the scent of a truffle. We wanted you to be able to, you know, feel what it's like to enter into Angelo's house, where you're walking on its cold marble floors and you feel the warmth of the fireplace. We wanted to, you know, we wanted the cinematic experience to be sort of all encompassing and to really transport you into that world. So we hope, you know, in the edit, we decided, well, when are we going to actually show somebody eating a truffle? And that it felt like the right place later in the film, because we were working up to that moment, and we want you to feel the ecstasy of that moment, the ecstasy because for Paolo, the truffle judge, eating a truffle, he lives through his senses. He was a wine taster, and he's a truffle judge, and he lives through his senses. his entire life. So that moment is really a moment of bliss for him. And we wanted to bring you into that.
And we recorded a lot of sounds. I mean, we spent and we have thousands and thousands of sounds because we think that the sounds there sound different than anywhere else in the world. There's the sound of footsteps in the mud in Monferrato and Lenghe that sound very different than footsteps in the mud in Colorado. And so we spent a lot of time recording, you know, like what a bora, you know, a chingali sounds like at night. And what the footsteps of one dog sounds like versus another. We have microphones around the noses of the dogs also, so you can feel what it feels like to be a dog from that point of view. So we were, like Greg is saying, we wanted that to kind of be part of the immersive experience of the film, the sound.
Absolutely. And
really important.
And this is like coming through the movie like beautifully, because you know, you can even hear the sound of the truffle when it gets mm-hmm. cut, and so you can also have the sensation of the texture, mm-hmm. and is yeah. really, really beautifully done. I would like to ask you only a few questions about, you know, technical aspect of the movie. How many people followed and filmed the truffle hunters, and for how long?
In our crew. On our mm-hmm. side, it was Gregory and I behind the camera, and Leticia as our translator, co-producer, and a sound person. That's it.
That's it.
That's it. And we drove a van. You know, Gregory and I drove a van for those 3 years. That just on the side said the big friendly blue van, so that people thought we were friendly. And we had all the equipment in the van, and it also helped us with the truffle hunters because we're coming into their homes. And we don't want to be intrusive because they have work to do. They're farmers. They have things. They have rituals, and we don't want to interfere with that world. So we wanted to just let the camera kind of roll, and we just kind of disappeared behind them. And I think because we were there so often, I think that was easy. It was just like we became, you know, it's like, oh, you're here again, you know.
Here, again, like, here they are, the Americans.
Back. Don't come back. That's right. The Americanos.
Yeah. The Americani. So,
yeah. But I think it helped. It was like we'd come in, they'd be having lunch. We knew when they had lunch, and we would just set the camera and basically leave it there.
Yeah.
You know, I think that helped them.
The score is by Ed Cortez and features old Italian pop song along with Puccini. What made you choose Ed Cortez for the collaboration in your film?
Well, Ed is Brazilian, but his family is Italian.
Ah, and, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and he was introduced to us through a friend, and he understood the flavor of that world. And he was with us from the very beginning. We went through, because the film, we had no story, and the film kept kind of changing as we were getting to know this world. And he was sending us, we were sending him things, we shot scenes, and he was sending us music back. And at the end, we had just this beautiful soundscape. Like we had, at one part of the film, there's a track from Mutiny on the Bounty called Follow Me. And that was originally sang in Tahitian, the Tahitian choir, but we had it translated to Italian and had it sang in Italian in Brazil in this beautiful chorus that you hear. And Follow Me has a lot to do with, of course, you know, this film, especially, you know, kind of the ending.
Yeah. And it's Mike is saying that the process of creating the soundscape of the film, it really evolved throughout the editing process of the film. And there was kind of a dialogue going on between us, Ed, and the editor throughout the entire process. And he was sending us music that he'd create. Sometimes he'd send us other, you know, sometimes he'd send us pop tracks, Italian pop tracks that, you know, that ended up being in the film. But it was really, it was a conversation that really shaped what the final film was.
I mean, every time we were there was always singing going on. Everybody sings. You know, Sergio, when he's in his car, singing with his dogs, and Aurelio in the woods, he's singing. I mean, it was always full of music. So it felt right. I mean, one of the tracks is Caruso, a very, very early, you know, early track of his. And you hear it a couple of times, once in a very rough form, and once where we had added orchestra to it.
Have the men already watched the movie? And if so,
nope.
You know, not yet.
No, it's going to be a big surprise.
But they know about the success of the movie, right?
Oh, yeah, they read about it. Yeah,
but November, we planned on bringing it to Italy immediately after it premiered at Sundance, and the world changed in ways that we could have never imagined. But now we are bringing it to Italy, to the Torino Film Festival, on November 21st and 22nd. So we're going to have a special little screening just for the truffle hunters and their families. And one of the small towns where we filmed is going to throw a party to celebrate them. So it's going to be, we can't wait for that event, because they've seen little pieces along the way. We were showing them pieces of the film as we were filming, but they've never seen it all put together. And I think they're going to be, we hope they're going to be happy. That's really the true test of the film.
And also the poster that we did for Sundance, I don't know if you saw it, but it's a hand painted poster, just like the posters were done in Italy in the 1950s. Yes. Everything's in Italian. Even the lettering is hand painted. The portraits are hand painted, because when we were in Skywalker doing the mix, we were surrounded. George Lucas has a collection of these posters all over the walls of beautiful Italian posters, and that kind of inspired us. Plus, it felt right for that region and for this film to bring things back to the way it was.
There is a difference in the speed of leaves of the truffle dealer and the truffle hunters. The first doesn't even have the time to take a break and try the truffles, while the truffle hunters still live innocently in nature. And I would like also to understand, like, how many white truffle did you eat during the shooting? You were there in the front line.
A lot. Yeah. We were fortunate. I mean, we were fortunate.
The best white truffle we ate was when we were out with a truffle hunter, and this was really the first time we had a white truffle while we were filming, and it had been a year where there was a drought and there were very few truffles, and we had been out all night with one of our truffle hunters, and it was actually after the first rain of the season, which came very, very late. And he finally found a truffle and he was overjoyed. And we went back to his house. We thought he was going to call the truffle dealer Gianfranco to come pick it up and make a big sale. But he made a little fire in his cast iron cooking stove, and then he took out a pan and he cracked 8 eggs in it, and he when they were done, he shaved the truffle over it, and that was
wow.
The best breakfast we've ever had.
Wow, this is amazing.
That was amazing. That was the way to have it. It was pretty beautiful. It was and he said the truffle was perfectly, you know, blossomed and ripe. He said it was like he kept saying, oh my God, he was almost in tears at how perfect this was.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much to Gregory and Michael. The Truffle Hunters, will open in the US December 25th and will platform internationally through the winter 2020 and spring 2021. Mm-hmm. Congratulations to Gregory and Michael. Mm-hmm. And thank you for being with us today. From the New York Film Festival 2020, I'm Samantha Sartori, and this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.